Buying a home is more than a financial decision. It's a life event that involves determination and emotional investment. From house hunting to moving day, South State's experienced lenders are here to help each customer navigate the mortgage process with ease and confidence. Whatever your needs might be, they're here to help you bank the way you want. Visit your local branch or southstatebank.com for more information. All loans subject to credit approval. South State Bank, Equal Housing Lender, Member FDIC.
Anger is the spark. You know, anger is good sometimes. It's good if it moves you to action.
Hola, this is Adela Yelton, and welcome to Latina South Podcast, where we feature inspiring conversations with Latinas who are making things happen in their families, businesses, and communities throughout the South. Today, join me in conversation with Dr. Bettina Kaplan. Bettina teaches Latin American cultures and literatures at the University of Georgia. In 2010, she became angered by the policies banning undocumented students from the top five public universities in Georgia. Let's listen as Bettina shares how anger inspired her to take action. Bettina became part of the founding group of Freedom University in Atlanta, a safe space for undocumented students to continue their education. In 2014, she also co-founded You Lead Athens, a volunteer organization enabling college access for immigrant students and students from immigrant families, where she continues her work today. Welcome to Latina South. I appreciate you so much for talking with us.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk to you.
And Bettina, I know that you work in higher education and you have a real passion for equal access to higher education. I want to hear from you about how you arrived at that passion.
I knew that I was very interested in studying myself. I had the opportunity to attend amazing schools. I was not aware at all about the difficulties in this country. And I would say that I really learned how difficult it was when I moved to Georgia, particularly 1020, when the Board of Regents decided to ban undocumented students. If we're going to talk about passions, that's when my real passion started. My passion is more related to social justice than to the specific issue of access to higher education. I work in higher education. I thought I could make a difference from the privileged position that I am. And when the Board of Regents approved this resolution, I thought that they were not only cutting my rights to educate a segment of the population that I felt very involved with, identified with, but they were also cutting the futures of a large number of young people and their families in this state.
So you're referring to the ban in 2010 on undocumented students from the five most competitive universities in Georgia. And those set of resolutions, you saw directly the impact to many, many young people's lives and futures. And so you talk about identifying in some ways with these students. Let's talk more about your identity and how do you identify as a Latina, or, you know, what terms do you use?
That is a struggle that I still have. I came to this country as an adult and never referred to myself as a Latina because there was no need. We don't use that term outside this country. I grew up in a very privileged situation, as I said. I have a PhD from an Ivy League university in this country. I do not share the experience that most of the Latinx population had in this country. But definitely, I always felt very identified with this group. They speak my language, most of them, and if not, they share many cultural issues with me or with my understanding of what my culture is. I always could relate better with that population. After a while, I realized that, I have many common aspects. My identity is constructed in a different way than it was in my country of origin.
And your country of origin is Argentina.
Correct. I now feel a lot more comfortable using that term when I refer to myself.
What part of that did you relate to or did you connect with the students that you serve?
I share interest, with everything that the Latino community does in this country. Most of the Latinx in this area are from Mexico, or they are descendants from Mexicans or Salvadorians, now Venezuelans, Guatemalans. There are many differences, cultural differences between Argentinians and Central Americans. We still share, love for some, I don't know how to describe it, but personality aspects like giving long answers or coming late everywhere.
I hear you, and because I show up late a lot too, and my friends will laugh at me because of that. You know what? And I don't like it when other people say that about our culture, but it's okay if we say it about ourselves. I think it's okay.
No, it's about what the reasons that some people give to that. I don't think coming late to a meeting has nothing to be too late with laziness. It's something different.
Something different, yes. Nice to be able to find those areas of connection and be able to talk about them and feel comfortable, right? Referring to them with someone who gets it. Let's talk more about your passion and your work. Specifically, I want to go to the time where you helped start a place called Freedom University. What was the spark that led you to start up that initiative?
Anger is the spark. Anger is good sometimes. It's good if it moves you to action. That's what happened. So I personally was mad with myself because I was not following what was going on in the Board of Regents. I did not see it coming. Some of my colleagues did, but I personally did not. So I was very mad with myself. And I started talking to colleagues at the university. And we set a meeting with community members and start discussing actions. What is it that we can do from our positions or to protest? It was very interesting because the best answer came from a community member who told a group of professors from UGA, well, you're teachers. Why don't you teach them? They are denied classes. Why don't you open up classes for them? So after that, we met with a group of undocumented students and we told them, well, this is our idea and we want to know if you would be interested or if you have better ideas that we could follow you with. And they were absolutely enthusiastic about the idea of being in classes. I remember one of the students who said, well, I'm feeling that I'm losing my personality of a student. I have always been a student, and now I can no longer be a student. Being in a class is what I need right now. So we started the project with nothing, and we started finding out where we could meet. At the beginning, there were sort of clandestine meetings because we didn't know what reactions we were going to have. So it took us a while. We started offering the first class in August of 2011. It was an incredible success. The word went out, and we had a lot of volunteers and students. Volunteers were bringing. It was pre-DACA. There were very few students. Undocumented students could not drive legally, and we were concerned about them being stopped because of our class.
There was a risk.
A big risk. A lot of volunteers who were driving them. We met in Athens. We have a big group of students coming from Atlanta and other areas. Some students were, you know, we met on Sundays. They were like 3 or 4 hours in a car to come to our classes. And it was an amazing experience. We probably had around 40 students that first year.
The goal of Freedom University is, in your words?
At that moment, the goal was twofold: to protest creatively against the ban and to prove that these students had enough merit to be in a college level class. And the other part of the goal was to offer these students who could not get into classes, college level classes that they can attend.
Those are the goals that you set out to do, and you accomplished those goals.
We did. And the project still exists. You know, the people who started are no longer directly involved, but Freedom University is still running.
Part of your legacy, for sure.
We couldn't have done it without the volunteers and the students, particularly the students who took the risk to come and who commit to be in those classes. So I think it is the legacy of a big group.
This episode of Latina South is brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving communities since 1965. I recently watched a video called Los Viejitos, a TV spot that tells the story of a group of elderly amigos in South Miami who are having fun going to the same McDonald's since 1998. People working there know their orders by heart and appreciate them like familia. McDonald's has become special to this group, just like they've become special to McDonald's. Me encanta.
So Freedom University still exists and continues on in the Atlanta area, and you remain in Athens. I want to know more about what you've done since then.
2014, I left Freedom University, and again, with a group of people who were very concerned about the education of undocumented students, we started another group that is called You Lead Athens. This group is quite different in nature. We are not offering classes. What we offer is support for students to access a college education. We also realize the group that started this new project, You Lead Athens, was composed by, again, UGA faculty, but also local teachers and counselors. We knew by experience that not only undocumented students faced issues to get into college, but children of immigrants also face strong barriers. They don't have the Board of Regents ban against them, but they have many things against them. So we open up this project to immigrants and children of immigrants. We work with them one-on-one or in very small groups. We help them during the entire process of applying for college. That means getting ready for the tests, filling in applications, finding the right schools for them, finding scholarships. You Lead also has, we have our own scholarship, so we are able to help some of them. Right now we have 68 students receiving this scholarship in college. They are, all those 68 are now in college.
What a tremendous impact that you've made to lives and future, and is going to have exponential effect to community, the economy, to a lot of things, Bettina. And as I say that, and I can see you on the video, I know our listeners can only hear the audio, but I see you smiling from ear to ear. and I know you are, if you don't mind me saying, very soft-spoken, but you've got a huge voice and you're using it in a way to really make tremendous impact. But congratulations on You Lead Athens. And I know that you have a website and a way for people to connect and support the organization. And I know we'll include some links in the show notes. It's just interesting to me. And maybe I connect with you on this somewhat. I consider myself also an introvert. I'm not sure if you consider yourself an introvert or soft-spoken in general, but there's a lot going on inside of us. And when it decides to come out, it comes out. You know, what can we do about it other than act? I know it's not always easy, right? And so what would you say when you reflect on the two startups that you just described to me? What would you say were some of the biggest challenges?
I think I can start with a solution. And the solution is to find the right group of people to work with and have a clear idea of what the goal is. As I said, out of anger, I came up with a very clear goal. I want these people to be in college. I want them to have the access that I was given to higher education, and it was very easy to set the goal. It's not my goal, but it is shared by a lot of people, and very interesting people who wants to commit to do things to make this become a fact. So that is the solution. Find the right people, you know, listen to the people who these programs are directly benefiting. You know, it's so rewarding to know that the people we're helping are getting access to higher education. They are finishing, they are graduating. Some of them have plans to go to graduate school. So I think the key is the right goal and the right people to work with.
I know we talk about it, you know, going out and finding people that you can connect with shared goals and vision and commitment and passion. But I also know that there could be people that don't agree with what you're doing. You know, you're going and doing things that are in direct contrast to what the Board of Regents ruled. How do you deal with detractors or people that don't agree with you?
I know this is very political issue, and I take it as such, and I insert myself in the world of politics and try to negotiate in that way. And you are in the other side, you might be in the other side, but I'm gonna fight for this goal to become a reality, and this will happen. I know I'm in the right side.
Can you give me an example of where you did have to come face to face with someone who didn't agree with you?
When we started Freedom University, things went out to the press very, very soon. And we wanted it that way because it was a political reaction, what we were doing. You know, if you read the articles, there were things, especially in the ones online, comments from people, and they were really, really nasty. And they were attacking our students and they were attacking us. Well, it's a silly one. Maybe it's not what you are asking, but I remember one very well. And it was saying, why are these illegals getting free education and my child has to pay for it? That gives a little bit of the idea of how people react for the wrong reasons.
Instead of having empathy for the undocumented students that are in this plight, that don't have the access to education.
If you think everything should have free education, why don't you go out for it instead of blaming us for offering it? And you know, Freedom University was not accredited, so it wasn't the same for these students to go to our class or to a college. You know, they still come. they still come. UNID works more in the privacy. Freedom University is more out there and creating events to be visible. UNID, we also go to protests, but we are more introspective. We work more with individual students.
I understand. And I asked the question because it's not always easy. And I know a lot of times we focus on the successes, which we should, right? Because that's what keeps us going and fuels the passion for our work. But there are, you know, hurdles that we have to overcome and filter out some of the noise in order to make real impact for our work. Because those things can easily distract us if we let them. But they didn't distract you. And here you are still doing the things that are impactful in the community. So I appreciate you doing that. But I've learned so much in our conversation just now, and also learning and probably later in life that me being born in the U.S. Is a privilege. And I don't think I really appreciated that as much as I do now, when I do learn more and more about the plight of undocumented students. What else would you like our listeners to know about that work, and how can we best advocate or learn more or support you in your work?
Well, thank you for what you said. Interestingly, most of the students that we work with, they consider themselves Americans. They don't have the papers to prove it, but they have the life experience to prove it. So that shows even more the unfairness of all that they have to go through. I think it's important, you know, to know that the Latinx community, especially in this area of the country, is a mixed status. So it's not a separate group that are undocumented. There is not an undocumented family. The family has members that were born in the country and members that were not. They have different immigration status. So that makes that even the ones that have, as you said, the privilege of being born in this country, do not take full benefits of having born here. They have to deal with the situation of having undocumented brothers, sisters, parents, uncles, and being afraid of losing them at any time. There's not a lot of people who are aware of the situation of these citizens. And I think what you are doing, it's a wonderful way of educating people and giving information that for different reasons, it's not accessible to everyone.
The students that you serve, I mean, just human to human, understanding, maybe putting ourselves in their shoes for just a moment and understand what it must feel like, human to human, to be in constant fear of family members being deported, of you yourself possibly, and all those things. You know, a lot of people just don't know that part, or maybe they don't want to know it, but we need to talk about it.
Yeah, and you need to interview them. It's not about putting yourself in their shoes, but listen to their voices. They have very strong voices, and they have amazing stories too, and they're worth listening.
Some of the students that you serve, I'm happy to interview and share their stories more broadly so that we can all learn from each other's experiences, for sure. Thank you for offering that. What are some words of wisdom that you would like to pass along to our listeners?
I'm an educator, but I'm the kind of educator that believe that you have to construct your own words of wisdom. But regarding the subject that we have discussed, I think that it's very important to listen to the stories. And I think your project is amazing because of that. You're putting out the stories. So just be open to hear about different experiences and create connections with those stories so we can all live in a better world.
Thank you so much, Bettina, for speaking with me on Latina South. I look forward to following you continuing to follow you and your work. I know you're not done yet.
I will do the same with you.
Well, thank you. Likewise, we'll support each other. And isn't that what this podcast is all about?
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on Latina South Podcast. If you'd like to hear someone be interviewed on a future episode, please nominate them by dropping us a line at hola@latinasouth.com. Thank you, and hasta la próxima. See y'all.